Hello and welcome to this week's edition, which is the first edition of the new year 2018 for the Back 9 Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alveda. But you know, this is the first edition of the year. We're going to go wall-to-wall preview of what is to come this year on all major tours. So we need reinforcement. So our friend and colleague, dear golf guru, Kieran Clark, is here with us this year in the first edition of 2018. Kieran, I'm going to bring you first. How are you today? Happy New Year.
Yes, Carlos, thank you. Happy New Year to you and Fred and everybody listening to the show either now or on repeat later in the week. Obviously, a fantastic year of golf ahead. You know, so many stories packed in there. We had a compelling 2017, and we're carrying those storylines into this year. So many players trying to, you know, carry on what they were doing last year, and a lot of players as well trying to actually recapture previous form this season. So it's all kind of lined up on all the tours. There's so many stories there. Obviously, we have all the majors there, all the major tours, and of course, the Ryder Cup coming up late in the year in September, which is always a real highlight of any year. So it's going to be fascinating, and we obviously have a great show tonight trying to talk about it, and there's so much to condense into one show, so much to discuss, and I'm looking forward to getting to it. So let's go.
Let's go. Fred Alveda. Fred, welcome again. Happy New Year to you as well. How are you today?
Same to you guys. Fantastic. Wow, our first show of 2018 begins our fifth season of Back 9 Report. Plus, our good friend Kieran's here. That's always a blast to get his opinion and talk a little golf with him. So I feel just I'm like a kid at Christmas. It's like Christmas all over again. I'm so excited. hey, guys, Dustin Johnson served notice and left no doubt as to who is the most dominant golfer heading into 2018, but we might have a few other guys we can talk about that may give DJ a run this year. And I don't know about you guys, but I have several questions, and I'm going to be looking for answers this coming golf season. We're going to talk about some of those tonight. So, Carlos, Kieran, I'm rested and ready, so let's go. Let's talk golf.
Let's go. Today we're going to have, for you, the Weekend Backspin. We're going to review what happened at the Century Tournament of Champions, and also we're going to preview what's going to happen this weekend. And right after that, we're going to dwell right into our practice range like Fred said, we're going to have questions inquiring golf minds want to know for this year. We're going to give you a preview of everything that's going to happen, and then after that, our final thoughts. But I'm going to throw everybody a curve here, because before we go into what happened at the Century Tournament of Champions, guys, I want your take on the announcement that the big cat, Tiger Woods, did on the early 2018 schedule, which he already started to say, hey, I'm going to tee it off. Wow, a surprise. I mean, who would have thought? Torrey Pines at the Farmers Insurance Open. I mean, he has never won there. It's the first time that he's going to try to win there in Torrey Pines. He doesn't know that place. So he's going to go there. Actually, he has won 7 times and also famously won the U.S. Open in 2008 there. After that, he's going to go take a 2-week break before playing in the Genesis Open at Riviera, which is the site of his PGA Tour debut in 1992 when he was just 16 years old. But it will be his first appearance in the tournament since 2006. And also, after that, we don't know much of what he's going to do. We can only he will almost certainly play, I think, the Arnold Palmer Invitational in mid-March. I mean, he has won it, like, what, 8 times? Other tournaments he may opt to play would include the Honda Classic, the Valspar Championship, Houston Open. But that, guys, gives him an 8-week stretch before the Masters. And, of course, the WGC Mexico Championship and the Dale Match Play are there, but he's not eligible for either. So, Kieran, I'm going to give you first shot at what you think about Tiger Woods' early schedule.
Well, again, Carlos, like you intimated there, there's really no surprise that he's beginning his year at Torrey Pines. And the Genesis Open, he was actually due to play at Riviera last year before he had his injury problem in Dubai and withdrew from there. So he was due to play that event last season. He's doing it this year, fulfilling that commitment from last year. So two golf courses that, you know, they're two of the best golf courses in the tour in terms of prestige and history and so on, and he'll fit in there quite perfectly. And we'll talk about Tiger later on in the show as we get towards the practice range, but his schedule, I think, is not unexpected in the end. I think his schedule going beyond that will depend on how well he plays in these events. But I think Tiger will likely play in the Honda Classic, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, play maybe four or five events before the Masters. Obviously, he's spoken about at the end of last year that he's looking forward to all the majors this year. He plans to play in all four of them. It's actually his last year of being exempt in the US Open, believe it or not, actually a decade after he won his final major. But I'm sure the USGA will extend him an invite in the coming years if he needs one, as they're prone to doing. So Tiger, again, we'll talk about it later, but Gil, Carlos and Fred, this shows you that, you know, we're kicking off this show about Tiger Woods, and that's, to this day, he is the needle. It's astonishing where so many great players are on the tour now, Dustin Johnson playing so well, all these great players, but still Tiger, he's the guy that gets us moving. We pay attention to anything he does. It's extraordinary. So he still has that power, and that power will not diminish in the weeks ahead.
Fred, this time when he's going to be at the Riviera, he's going to be also the host this time of that tournament. So what do you think about his early schedule?
Yeah, they've added that to the Tiger Woods Foundation benefit. Torrey, I mean, yeah, that's a no-brainer. He knows that place like the back of his hand for sure. You know, you said there's no surprise here, but there is a surprise, guys. No Middle East tournament so far. So that tells us, that makes a big statement to me right there. I don't want to sit in an airplane, even if it's my own airplane and I got my own bed. I don't want to fly for 15 hours to go play golf someplace, even if they're going to pay me $1 million or $2 million. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to concentrate here on some of the tournaments I need to play in to get myself ready just to play in the majors. That makes a big statement to me that he's not chasing, you know, flying halfway around the world to play golf someplace. So, yeah, I think it's great. I can't wait to see him. We were excited to watch him. I'm going to make some statements about that later in the show, but we were excited to watch him at the Hero World Challenge. He played well. We're all excited. Can't wait to see him more, guys.
Carlos, one thing I would say about your friend's point, yes, and it's an interesting point you raised there about the Middle East, is that this year the Dubai Desert Classic actually clashes with the Torrey Pines event, which it hasn't done in the past. So in that case, it may have been a decision between one or the other. But I think Fred's right there. Your Tiger could have begun his season in Abu Dhabi the week before, but I'm not sure he wants to play consecutive weeks just yet. But this year, Dubai actually clashed with Torrey.
That's right. That's right. Hey, let's go now because, like Kieran said, we're going to talk a little bit more about Tiger Woods later in the show. But just wanted to start with that introduction to his schedule. But let's talk about what happened this past weekend. Dustin Johnson won the first PGA Tour event of the 2018 with something to spare there. He fired a closing 65 to come out on top by 8 strokes in the Century Tournament of Champions. He began the final round too clear of Brian Harman at Kapalua, but had increased his advantage through six holes, to six through the first 9 holes. He then turned on the afterburners. I mean, he driving close on the par 4 12th and leaving a tapping eagle. I mean, his power is incredible. It was a second eagle in 2 days for DJ on the 432-4-yard hole. On Saturday, he had holed a 70-yard downhill chip, and on the final day, he made it far easier for himself, blasting his tee shot all the way to the putting surface. I mean, it was unbelievable.
That thing was dead end, too. I mean, it was tracking. If it could have just turned two more times, it would have been in the hole.
Yeah. Brian Harman, he struggled on Sunday. He fell back with a closing 72 to finish far ahead, in third place. Spain's John Ram, he carded 69 to end the week alone in second place. It was a 17th PGA Tour victory for Dustin, who has strengthened his position as the world's number one golfer. He has now won a tournament on the circuit in 11 straight seasons. That is the longest current streak on the PGA Tour. DJ drove the ball prodigiously all week in Hawaii, and that was the key to his success. I mean, aside from that top in eagle on 12, DJ also drove the par 4 14th during the final round. He will be playing next in the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship on the European Tour. John Rahm, wow. I mean, what else can I say about this guy? He has been a pro for a little over 18 months, and he has already announced himself as one, if not the greatest prospects in the world of golf. Except, he's not really a prospect. He's the real deal already. He finished as runner-up to Dustin Johnson in the Tournament of Champions on a course he has never played before, and he leapfrogs Justin Thomas up into the third spot in the official world golf rankings. That means that the 23-year-old has reached the world number three spot quicker than all but three men in history, according to a tweet that the European Tour did this past week. Only Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth has broken into the top three quicker than him. And in case if you're wondering, because of course, what's next? Try to be number one. Well, who have been faster than number one? Everybody knows. Tiger Woods did it 21 years old and 167 days old when he became first the world number one. That was back in June 15, 1997. Rory McIlroy became the second youngest at 22 years old and 312 days when he took over the top spot March 4, 2012. But then Jordan Spieth took over the second youngest player title from Rory when he became number one in August 16, 2015, at 22 years old and 20 days. Of course, John can never. He's already older than that. He will never be faster than those three to become number one if he becomes number one. But now with a runner-up to DJ in the match place last year, Rahm definitely confirmed that he's a talent here to stay on the PGA Tour. But you all know, long before that, I have been raving about him. Just have to put that out there. Anyway, another player I have always hyped about, Hideki Matsuyama. He finished in the tie for fourth and looks to be coming back into form. He has two other top five finishes from three starts on the PGA Tour so far this season, and he had reason for optimism after that final round of 66. I mean, he said, and I'm going to quote, "What I'm going to take from this week is I really hit some quality iron shots all week long. I wish I could say the same about my driver and putter. But again, I'm looking forward to these next 2 weeks to create those two things that I need to be ready for my next tournament at Torrey Pines." End of quote. I know he'll get him straightened out open sooner rather than later. Running up the top 10, tied for fourth with Hideki, where Ricky Fowler and Pat Perez, who continues his solid play, it's not a coincidence anymore that he's playing great. Tied for seventh were the 54-hole leader Mark Leishman and Jonathan Vegas. Jordan Spieth finished solo ninth, and Siwoo Kim solo 10th. Other notable players, Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele, T22, and Brooks Koepka. Seems like he was in vacationing mode because he finished last, dead last in 34 at a whopping 13 over. Fred, your thoughts on the Century Tournament of Champions?
Yeah, I saw Brooks Koepka. I hope he's feeling okay. I hope he wasn't sick, or they didn't say anything about him, or I hope he's not hurt or anything, but he did not play well over there. But my only comments about the Century Tournament Champion was that DJ came out on Sunday and took charge. He nearly holed out on 12 that you mentioned, 433 yards. That just kind of put an exclamation point on everything. You know, it's always a pleasure to check out the fantastic views of Kapalua and, of course, the blue Pacific Ocean. And you mentioned Pat Perez. He just came out on Facebook just as we were starting the show, announced that he and his wife are pregnant, 42 years old, and he's finally going to be a father. He's pretty excited about it. The September due date for them. Congratulations to them. You know, right now, when Dustin Johnson is right, no one, not Jack Nicklaus, not Tiger Woods, not Bobby Jones, not Ben Hogan, no one is going to beat Dustin Johnson when he's right now.
Wow, that's a strong statement. I mean, not even Rory at his best? No one?
Nope.
No one, really?
No one.
Wow.
Dustin Johnson,
what you think about that?
He is doing some amazing stuff
Wow. Kieran, what did you think about that?
Well, I must say, Fred has just dropped his first bombshell of the year. That's quite
yeah,
strange.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, it didn't take long, did it, Carlos? But, I think Dustin Johnson, in terms of his technical ability and the tools that he has, he is right up there with the most capable players of all time. The question I would have with Dustin Johnson, though, is when you get down to the heat of a major championship, I know he did it at the US Open, but in those real pressure situations where it really counts, I still think that the likes of Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods would have these intangibles that would just cross the line ahead of him. But in terms of his sheer raw ability and talent, then he's up there because he has an incredible athletic physique, technique, so powerful, so carefree with his game. His wedge game now is up there with the best, and that's why he's world number one. I actually think, Carlos, this week was really a statement of intent from Dustin Johnson. Yes, it's a limited field. Yes, it's the first event of the season, but coming out here really strong, winning it in the fashion he did. Because last year was a kind of strange year for him. He was so brilliant in the spring last year. And then he had that, obviously bizarre injury at the Masters at Augusta, which cost him that place. And then he didn't really come back consistently. He picked up a win in the FedEx Cup playoffs later in the year, but he wasn't really a factor in the big tournaments over the summer last year. But now, and obviously at the HSBC Champions in China, he had that collapse in the final round where Justin Rose came through and won. So, Dustin Johnson was world number one, but he had some questions to answer. And I think this week he really showed that he can answer those questions and he can remain the world's number one player throughout the season. But obviously he'll have some stiff competition from the rest behind him. It was certainly impressive. And actually, kind of filling on a thing that Fred mentioned there about Brooks Koepka, apparently Brooks Koepka is suffering from a wrist injury, which has troubled him for the past couple of months. He's not sure what's caused it, why it's there, a left wrist injury, but it's been causing him real discomfort and pain throughout his entire game. And of course, he also finished, I think, last at the Hero World Challenge back in late November. And again, of course, here as well. So Brooks Koepka, obviously had a great 2017, won the US Open, played so great in the Ryder Cup the year before, President's Cup and all that, but for him this year, there are some questions there too, because that injury could be really concerning, because he's such a great player, could be one of the real big stars in American golf in the next 5 years, but this injury could be troublesome for him. So that's unfortunate, and we hope it's nothing too serious and he gets that solved before the season really kicks in. But Carlos, yes, Dustin Johnson, when the guy is almost making aces on par fours, what can you do? You can't beat that, can you? So, he was great. It was fantastic. It was a real exhibition of power on a golf course that really lends itself to that, because it is obviously such undulations and downwinds, and you can hit the ball a mile. Even I could hit the ball a mile. Even Fred could hit the ball even with Johnson there, I think.
I still can't hit it. I'm a driver 3-wood wedge on a 433-yard hole. Sorry.
So even Dustin Johnson, it was a playground for him, and he had the toys, and he played great. So it was good to watch.
No, definitely. And adding to Brooks Koepka, definitely. I mean, it was revealed a couple of days ago that he's struggling with a mysterious wrist injury. I mean, the doctors have not been able to identify the source of it, what is causing it. So his recent struggles definitely are a byproduct of that lingering left wrist injury. Like you said, he finished also last in the Hero World Challenge. So that's particularly concerning because the doctors don't know what's wrong. I mean, all he knows is that it hurts. So we'll see. Hopefully they can find it, because unless they find what really is the cause of that, they have no way of treating it. They doesn't know either the extent or the cause of the injury. So we'll see. Hopefully he can get better. He's scheduled to play at next month's Waste Management Phoenix Open, which he won in 2015, followed by the AT&T Pebble Pro Beach Program. So that's what we know about him so far. So that will wrap up our weekend backspin. Now we're going to go into the 4 o'clock, the quick previews for this week. But before we go into that, which Fred is going to kick off with the preview of the Sony Open on the PGA Tour, he has some word for us.
Guys, we want to welcome Boyne Resort in Petoskey, Michigan, as a sponsor of Back Nine Report. Boyne Resorts have grown from a single ski hill in 1947 to encompass three of the best stay-and-play golf resort locations in Michigan. Boyne Mountain, Boyne Highlands, and the Bay Harbor Golf Club, with the gorgeous inn at Bay Harbor, all located within close proximity to Petoskey. The corporation is going to include other resorts in various parts of the country. Big Sky Resort in Montana, Brighton Ski Resort in Utah, the Summit in Washington, New Hampshire's Loon Mountain, Sugarloaf, and Sunday River in Maine, Cypress Mountain in British Columbia, and Gatlinburg Skylift in the Great Smoky Mountains. In Michigan alone, Boyne's three resorts encompass 10 championship golf courses that will please any golfer's appetite. Plus, the views of Little Traverse Bay and Lake Michigan from the Lynx course at Bay Harbor are truly awe-inspiring. If you haven't visited the Boyne Resorts in northern Michigan, do yourself a favor and book your next summer vacation now. Check out their special Great Escape package. You can check that out at Boyne.com. It's Boyne.com. And I got to tell you guys, it's one of my favorite places. I love it up there. So, Carlos, let's go right on into the preview. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the Sony Open. Also, I'm going to mention just a real brief statement about the Diamond Resorts Invitational. There's two events going on. I'm going to the Sony Open is in Honolulu, and the Diamond Resorts Invitational is a pro celeb event being held in Orlando. Dustin Johnson won't be in the field this week in Hawaii. He already grabbed his million, plus the blue chair from the Century Tournament of Champions, headed back to South Florida. Defending champ Justin Thomas is hanging around for Hawaii for another week and will headline the field at the Sony Open. Big news is he has a decent caddy on the bag. Jim Bones McKay will put down the microphone for a couple days and do some looping for the defending champ. This will be the 53rd playing of this event, which began as a media ploy to showcase Hawaii's beautiful views and entice snowbound golfers in the mainland to venture to the land of sunshine, beaches, and hula girls. I think it turned out pretty well for the tourism industry in Hawaii. Besides that, it, you know, struck up a few television shows, Hawaii 5-0, and they're even doing a remake of that, and Magnum P.I. Oh, who wouldn't want to live in Hawaii? Hey, 20 of the 34 players who played last week in Kapalua are in the Century are also in the field this week at Wailea. 10 of the top 20 in the current FedEx Cup standings, and 7 players who are in the top 30 in the world golf rankings. Wailea is a short hitter's ballpark with tight dog legs. Justin Thomas broke all the rules last year when he continuously hit driver over the dog legs to the front of the greens. Will we see a repeat performance this year? You know, it's too bad that Dustin Johnson isn't in the field this week. Wouldn't you like to see him, see what he would do a Wailea, taking it up over those trees and cutting those corners? No, I'm not for a restricted golf ball. I think that's fun to watch. You know, if you like golf in prime time, Golf Channel has the coverage, 6 to 9, beginning on Thursday evening, guys.
And now we're going to move on to the European Tour, where there are two events. And Kieran, you're going to talk to us about the Eurasia Cup.
Yes, Carlos. The Eurasia Cup, this will be the third edition of this event, a team match between Europe and Asia. Previously, they had the World Trophy, and this event kind of took over from that a few years ago. And it will be held in Malaysia at Glenmarie Golf and Country Club. Now, this is really actually quite intriguing this week, more so than it would normally be, because of really the strength of the European team that's there, particularly, of course, in a Ryder Cup year. Thomas Bjorn, of course, will lead Europe at Le Golf National in September. He's leading this week. He's the captain for Europe this week, too. And he has a really strong team taking on Arjun Atwal's Team Asia. But looking at the lineup that Bjorn has at his disposal this week, it's almost like a Ryder Cup team itself. And it wouldn't be looked too out of place as a Ryder Cup team. You have Rafael Cabrera-Bello there, who of course formed an unbeaten partnership with Sergio Garcia at Medina in 2016. Paul Casey is back in the fold. He's taken up European Tour membership again, and he's now back in the scene and playing this week. He hasn't been in the Ryder Cup since 2008, and I think we can expect he'll be there later on this year as well. You also have Paul Dunne, who of course won the British Masters last year, great young Irish player. Ross Fisher, who of course played in the Ryder Cup back in 2010. He was one of the most consistent players on the European Tour last season. Matt Fitzpatrick is there, who of course played in the Ryder Cup in 2016. He won the European Masters at the Grand Cercier last autumn. You also have Tommy Fleetwood, who of course was so incredible last year, so consistent, and of course won the race to Dubai, fending off Justin Rose in the last event to win that, and he's trying to carry on this season with that form, and he'll look set to be a Ryder Cup debutant later this year, and he'll be one of the key members of the European team this week. You also have Tyrrell Hatton, who won back-to-back events in October on the European Tour at the Dunhill Links and the Italian Open. Alex Levy is also there, the Volvo China Open winner from last year. Obviously a French player, he'd love to be part of the Ryder Cup this year in Paris. And if he can make a good statement this week, then maybe he'll have an outside chance of achieving that goal later this season. Alex Noren is also in the team this week. He'd obviously had an unbelievable 2 years on the European Tour, winning so many events, most notably winning the BMW PGA Championship last year at Wentworth when he shot a final round of 62. He's a really impressive player and obviously a guy who's finally kind of reaching his peak at a somewhat more advanced age than many of the guys are nowadays. He's really impressive and could make his Ryder Cup debut later this year. One guy who was a real standout in the last Ryder Cup, of course, was Thomas Peters. Hasn't quite reached those heights since then. He's in the team this week and will try and recapture that form of 2016 when he was a formidable partner with Rory McIlroy. You also have Henrik Stenson, obviously 2016 Open champion, really experienced player, won the FedEx Cup race to Dubai. He's done a lot of great things in golf, and he's obviously going to be a real, he's either one of the real stalwarts for Europe this year, as a lot of the older guys, Westwoods and so on, are kind of drifting away. Stenson will now take on that role as a senior statesman within the teams. And the final member of the team this week is Bernd Wiesberger, who's a very impressive Austrian player, perhaps most notable in America for having contended at the PGA Championship at Valhalla back in 2014 when Rory won. He kind of fell away in the last day, but he was there. I think he was in the final group that day, if I remember correctly. So it's this week, obviously, in the end, particularly, in terms of the result, doesn't really matter. The Asian team's a very young side. The European team should win quite comfortably on paper. But in the end, for this week, really, it's more about building strategies, potential partnerships, team bonding, all things the European Tour and particularly the European Tour of Ryder Cup Committee have done so well over the years. You know, they've really built this kind of continuity within their squads, within their captains, assistant captains, the players. They're all involved in the process. They're all kind of there all the time. It's a progression all the time. And of course, the US have tried to adopt that in recent years with, of course, significant success, having won the Ryder Cup last time out, of course, being dominant in the President's Cup. So for Europe, it'll be interesting to see how well these guys play, who plays with who, how well they mesh together as a partnership. Because given the strength of this team, you know, at least half of these guys, maybe even seven or eight of them, could conceivably be on the European team later this year at the Golf National. Obviously, if you include the guys like Rory McIlroy and John Rahm and players like that, they'll be there, Sergio Garcia. But a lot of these guys will be there, and Thomas Bjorn will. This is a really useful exercise for him. So if you like some team golf, it's worth watching. But particularly for the Ryder Cup subtext, you're trying to see some patterns and maybe you'll see some potential partnerships that you'll see on a much grander stage later this year, Carlos.
And that is very, very interesting because it's at the beginning of the year. We know it's Ryder Cup year. So definitely there's some look into possible, like you say, matchups and maybe some possible captain's picks that could be influenced by whatever happens now in the Eurasia Cup as well. So very worth watching. We'll see that. But let's say after its month-long break, I mean, the European Tour is back for the next few months while the mainland collectively shivers, the tour follows the sun. First up is a return to South Africa, and once more, South Africa's National Open takes place at Glendower Golf Club, which is a venue used for the last four editions. The home Springbok players can often dominate their own events, but the count so far at Glendower is 3-1 to the Europeans, who extended their lead when Graham Storm edged out Rory McIlroy in a playoff last year. Who would have thought that was the nearest that Rory McIlroy came to winning in 2017. incredible. But there's no McIlroy this time, and four of South Africa's major champions are playing: Ernie Els, Retief Goosen, Charles Rodsell, and Trevor Immelman. Brandon Grace is the highest-ranked South African in the field. This tournament dates back to 1903. Gary Player is a 13-time winner of the South African Open. Glendower Golf Club opened in 1937 and held its first two tournaments 2 years later when Bobby Locke won the Transvaal Open. Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño received a sponsor's exemption along with former Masters champion Mike Weir. Dylan Fratelli, that's a guy that you have to look for. I mean, that's one, definitely one of the new wave of young South Africans who really made a big mark in 2017. Fratelli finished 19th in last year's race to Dubai after a win and a second. He's already third on the 2018 list after landing last month's co-sanctioned Mauritius Open. Also fourth at the season-ending DP World Tour Championship. He has a mixed record here at Glendower. Miscut 18 and miscut, but that top 20 in 2016 is probably the best guy given the significant strides he's made over the last year. He's really trying to play here in his National Open. He's just outside the top 50 as he's resuming his bid to earn a spot in the Masters. David Howell and Peter Hansen are using career money exemptions on the European Tour to play. If you want to watch it, television, Thursday and Friday, 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Golf Channel. Saturday and Sunday would be from 5 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. on the Golf Channel. The defending champion, Graham Storm, will be there. Fred, some words to close the section.
Yes. You know, when you think of great golf resorts in the United States, you think of Pinehurst, you think of Pebble Beach, you think of the Greenbrier. But did you know one of the nation's premier golf resorts is located right here in the Midwest, just a few hours from where I am? Nestled among Amish farms and the rolling hills of southern Indiana sits historic French Lick Resort. The town and resort first became known for its mineral springs. They opened the French Lick Hotel in 1845, and the healing power of the waters drew people from all over the country. 180 years later, the French Lick Hotel and Casino still occupy the same spot. The West Baden Springs Hotel was originally built in 1855, but fires and neglect left it uninhabitable until a group of investors completely renovated it and turned it one of the most amazing, hospitable hotels in the country. Its 200-foot-high dome ceiling was the eighth wonder of the world in 1904. It's still awe-inspiring when you walk in there today. It just almost takes your breath away. The great Larry Bird put the area on the map with his Hall of Fame basketball career, but the French Lick Resort has always offered the finest to its thousands of visitors every year. In addition to games of chance at the French Lick Casino, the best cuisine available at any of the several restaurants in either the French Lick Hotel or the West Baden Inn, or if you want some tender loving care at the spa, the French Lick Resort also has two fabulous golf courses. The Donald Ross course first opened in 1917. Walter Hagen won the 1924 PGA Championship on that course. And if you're a fan of golf history, the Ross course at French Lick is also a joy to play. The Pete Dye course sits atop the second highest peak in Indiana and provides views for up to 40 miles. It has hosted numerous big events. The PGA of America has held the 2010 PGA National Professional Championship on the course, plus it hosted the 2015 Senior PGA. And then just recently, the Women's Legends Tour recently held its first ever Senior Women's LPGA Championship on the Pete Dye course. The French Lick Resort needs to be added to your bucket list of golf destinations. I guarantee it will become one of your favorites. To find out more, visit FrenchLick.com. Guys, back to you, Carlos.
And with that, we close our four-call, the quick previews for this week in action. And we're going to go dive right away now into the practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic. Each of us take our own shots at it. But this topic is so big, we cannot do it on our own. That's why Kieran Clark is here with us. We need his help, his knowledge, his insight to help us try to figure out what the answers to the questions that inquiring golf minds want to know for the 2018. And there is plenty of questions that we need to answer, and we have all of them for you. Let's start right away with the first one, Fred. I'm going to shoot it out to you. And, you know, Justin Thomas did pretty good last year. I mean, I think he won a couple of things there, here and there, some big bucks or something like that. But do you think that he will continue that trend that he set in 2017, dominating the PGA Tour in 2018?
I think it's almost impossible for him to continue at that high of a level. I mean, he had a career year last year. He won early and often. He collected a total of 5 wins, including his first major championship title at the PGA Championship. He finished runner-up to Xander Schauffele at the season-ending Tour Championship, but that was good enough to pocket the $10 million FedEx Cup, and the Player of the Year honors as well. He appears to be ready to contend for more titles and majors in 2018. He's already won the inaugural CJ Cup at 9 Bridges in October as part of the wraparound season. This makes the 3rd consecutive year Thomas has won on the fall schedule. I do think the bloom is a little bit off the rose for Justin, but at 25 years of age, he still has the fire to compete and win golf tournaments. Plus, I think an added bonus for him is he wants to beat his buddy Jordan Spieth. Thomas still has a bit of catching up to do in the major category with just the PGA Championship to Jordan's 3 major titles. You know, there's another guy that may have something to say about who dominates in 2018, that Dustin Johnson guy who just won last week. He might have a say in it. And then you got Rory coming back. And then you got a couple other guys that may contend also. So will Justin Thomas dominate like he did last year, 5 wins? I really doubt that he has 5 wins, but I see him winning 2 or 3 times, and maybe adding another major. I think he's going to be a class player for a while to come. Yes, Carlos.
And there you have it. That was what Fred is saying about Justin Thomas. He definitely had a great year. Kieran, before I throw out to you the question, of course, you can reply to that, to what Fred has said, but your question will be... You know, Fred mentioned a guy named Jordan Spieth. He's done pretty well himself, but after that breakthrough year that he set, he almost won all 4 majors, you can say. He won 2, but the other 2 were very close. He set the bar so high for him that everybody expected him to really dominate the world. But what is next for him, up next this year? What do you expect Jordan Spieth to be doing? And, of course, your comments to what Fred has said about Justin Thomas.
Well, I think firstly, Fred's pretty accurate about Justin Thomas. We have to remember that, obviously, you know, Dustin Johnson, the world number one, did tail off in his form over the second half of last season, and that kind of opened the door for somebody to really emerge. Even Jordan Spieth, he obviously won the Open Championship, but there was no real standout player throughout the summer last year. So Justin Thomas really took the mantle and, you know, took that place for himself. He took his opportunity, and that's what the great players do. And will he have the opportunity this year? Somehow I don't think so, but I actually think the top guys will be more consistent this year. You know, Fred mentioned Rory and so on. I think Rory will certainly be better this year. He has to be. Otherwise, what's he doing with himself? Where's he going? So I think the window is a little bit narrower this year for the likes of Justin Thomas, but you know, he's such a brilliant talent. You know, he can do anything on a golf course. He's so powerful. He's confident. He's now got the confidence of having a major under his belt and a lot of victories. So you know, Justin Thomas is one of several really impressive players we have right now in the game, and he's fun to watch. So and obviously now, with Bowens by his side, at least for this week, who knows how long it will be. Jimmy Johnson's regular carry, I think, is out for at least the next month or so. So who knows if Bowens' retirement will come to a close. You never know, but certainly he's very impressive. But obviously, and Fred mentioned there, the rivalry, almost like a sibling rivalry he has with Jordan Spieth. And Kyle, your question there was about Jordan Spieth. And I think Spieth is such a remarkable young man. I admire the way he handles himself. I admire his game because he doesn't have the same tools that Dustin Johnson has. Dustin Johnson is like a once-in-a-generation physical talent. Rory McIlroy, much the same. Even Justin Thomas, you know, he is so powerful. Jordan hits the ball certainly a fair distance. He's not by any means short off the tee, but he has to do it differently. He doesn't have the same explosive power that those guys have, and so many of the great young players now, you know, John Rahm and so on, Brooks Koepka when he's fit, you know, those guys. So Jordan has to do it in a different way, and in that way he's almost like a throwback to players of the past, where it's more about guile and ingenuity and intelligence and strategy and placing his way around. But he also has this amazing intangible ability that the legends have to do the big things at the right moment, to do the right thing at the right time. We saw it when he held the bunker shot at the Travelers. You know, that came out of nowhere to win that amazing back nine at Birkdale last year. You know, that was one of the most astonishing things I've ever seen. What a turnaround that was. It was like a roller coaster. You know, Alfred Hitchcock didn't direct a better, more suspenseful film than that, because it was incredible, that duel he had with Kutcher, the way he turned it around. That shows you he has... It's fine standing on the tee, hitting the ball 350 off the tee or towering iron shots, but only very rare players can do what Spieth did at Birkdale and that kind of thing, and winning all those majors in 2015, like you say, Carlos, almost on the verge of potentially winning three legs of the Grand Slam, maybe even four of them. It was an astonishing year. Then, of course, he tailed off a little bit in 2016. You know, obviously had that shocking collapse at the Masters, and that took him a little bit of a while to get over that. He still won events, he still was consistent, but he wasn't at the same level. Then last year, he came back again, picked up his third major, and now he's looking really good. Obviously, his personal life, he's engaged to be married, so it's all looking rather rosy for Jordan Spieth. But this year, again, I think, you know, Spieth has, as a guy to watch, it's the reason that he's a little bit different from the rest. The rest of them are all the big power hitters. He's not one of those guys. And for that reason, I think he could actually kind of upset the cards at some point, and maybe even win another major or two, because even when he doesn't play at his best, he still finds a way to be in contention, or at least finishing in the first couple of pages of a leaderboard. He grinds out every shot. He doesn't give up. He's got an incredible attitude, and he's a true professional in every aspect. So I think Spieth is capable of anything. I'm not sure he's going to quite be world number one or reel off the maybe five, six wins, but I think Spieth's a guy who maybe, you know, a little bit like... You know, a little bit like a sort of a Nick Faldo type player, where he doesn't necessarily win that many regular tour events, but he'll win a lot of majors because he has such a good golf brain, and that's what you need to have in a major. You know, it's fine. You know, Fred mentioned Dustin Johnson earlier, but Dustin has all the tools, but does he quite have the edge under pressure? And I think he's certainly better than what he was, and obviously winning US Open is a testament to that. But I think Spieth has it on another level. And so we get towards Augusta, you know, the U.S. Open, the Open. Spieth will be thereabouts. So I think Spieth can be the guy that some kind of upsets the odds this year and actually, you know, maybe usurps some of the power hitters that we are talking about more frequently. So, yeah, don't rule out Jordan Spieth, Carlos, because he's such an impressive character. He's still only 24 years of age. You know, he's done incredible things. He's on course to be an all-time great player. And he keeps up that trend, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does that this year again.
Oh, I wouldn't discount him at all. I've always said that there's nobody that competes better and more than Jordan Spieth. Mentally, no one else, not DJ, not John Rahm, not Justin, not Hideki, anybody. Mentally, he has it all. He can compete. He's not going to freak out. He's not going to be intimidated by anybody else's power. I mean, he's going to go there and give it his all, which is very important, like you say, in the majors. I definitely agree with you. I see him competing and contending to win the majors this next year. But you guys have mentioned world number one, Dustin Johnson. Would he get back to the form that made him number one early last year? Can he win the Masters? Well, the answer lies to me in... No, he doesn't have to return to that form. He's almost there already. I would say that after what we saw there, of course, there in Kapalua, that's a course that suits his style, his strengths, and all that. But I think he's there already. I think he's going to be the world number one. He's going to go for the Masters. If you might remember, he fell down the stairs in the house that he was renting for the Masters, and that prevented him from playing. He had reeled off three wins consecutive before going into the Masters, and that didn't allow him to play and win that tournament. He was the heavy favorite. He had to go back again and play the Wells Fargo Championship 6 weeks after. And after that, he's even finished T2. That's when, like you mentioned, Kieran, he tailed off a little bit. He made two missed cuts at the Memorial and the U.S. Open. Everybody was freaking out. What's happening with him? He's never going to be back. But then he wins in the Northern Trust in that final Sunday battle with Jordan Spieth, where he really outplayed him off the tee at the end there, and he won that first leg of the FedEx Cup. So he hasn't done the same way, but we're seeing him now with that T2 at the HSBC Champions, and now the win at the Century Tournament of Champions. I think he's there. He's going to be the world number one for the rest of the year. I truly think he's the favorite to win the Masters. I'll reserve my prediction to whether he's going to win it or not for that show, but definitely he's going to be the favorite heading into that tournament. He's definitely the world number one for a long time. He's right now has a 11.1941 average points, which is well over 2 points over Jordan Spieth, who is at 9.0265. So it will take a big, big effort from anybody else, Jordan Spieth, John Rahm, or Justin Thomas, who are the 2, 3, and 4, to overtake him. And him, he has to come down. But right now, he's the guy that has the most points gained in the past 2 years. Now, that being said, before I pass it on to Fred, you can answer that to what I have said about him. But I'm going to ask you about one of your favorite players, which we have been expecting this from him every year. We make the same question. Do you think Ricky Fowler will finally win a major in 2018?
Well, the answer is that, to real quickly, is yes. But before I go into detail, I want to go back and address both of your guys. Kieran talked about Jordan Spieth and his great mental ability Carlos, you agreed with that and expounded on it. And then you talked about Dustin Johnson. You both talked about his phenomenal physical ability. He's almost like a freak of nature. His workouts allow him to do that. He's not like Tiger and Rory, where they go for the heavy lifting and build up these big, strong upper body, tight muscles. He has been all about flexibility and swimming and doing all this stuff, and it obviously works. That's what these guys should have been doing all along. But to get back to your points, my question is, if you could put Jordan Spieth's mind together with Dustin Johnson's body, did you have Tiger Woods? That'd be like...
That wouldn't even go ahead. Be fair to do that. That wouldn't even be fair.
I know. Like
that's Fred's equivalent of Frankenstein's monster. That's something else.
Absolutely. But that would be the perfect golfer right there, man, I'm telling you. Getting back to Ricky Fowler, I do think he is a guy who can win majors. I mean, he's proven that. But, it's been three full years since Ricky finished runner-up in two of the majors and top five in all four in 2014. He's only had two top five finishes in the last 12 majors. He is long. He's talented. He has a short game. What's he lacking? Well, I think it's a killer instinct. He's annually lauded as one of the nicest guys on tour, but nice guys don't always win. I really believe he has the ability, has shown it in the past. He just needs to dig down and find the nasty to beat the brains out of a couple other guys to bag a couple of majors. So, do we think Ricky Fowler will win a major in 2018? I think he has the talent. I think he can do it, but when you throw in all these guys we're talking about, Rory, Dustin, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, even you can talk about Hideki if you want to, and maybe a couple other guys, Justin Rose we're not talking about. So the fields are deep. There's a lot of good guys. Ricky has won everywhere. He's won in Europe. You know, he can win an Open Championship. I like him to win. I'm just waiting for him to do it. I still like him a lot. I love to watch him play. So that's my thoughts on that one, guys.
So, Kieran, your thoughts on Ricky Fowler, and also answer for us, please. What role would the big cat, Tiger Woods, play on the 2018 PGA Tour, or maybe any other tour? Will he play anywhere else? What do you think about what Fred said about Ricky Fowler and Tiger Woods?
Well, I think with Ricky Fowler, who has, like Fred said, a wonderful talent, a wonderful feel for the game. He's a great wind player, as he's shown in the Open Championship in the past. He won the Scottish Open at Dulwyn Links a couple of years ago, going back there this year. So, you know, Ricky has a real ability, I think, particularly, to actually win over on this side of the pond in a major. But again, it's fine having, look, there's so many guys on the tour who have the talent, who have the tools, who have the capability. What makes the great ones the best? You know, it's those little, it's the under pressure, it's a killer instinct, it's the mental toughness, it's the Jordan Spiethism, if you like. And does Ricky have that? Maybe more than he used to. I think we do forget his amazing finish to win the Players' Championship a few years ago. Incredible. And that shows you he can kill off events, but is it quite to the same extent as those other guys? I'm not so sure. Because in the end, I'm not sure a guy who wears a Hawaiian shirt on a golf course can really win a major. I admire his style, actually. I was quite impressed by that. But I'm not sure, you know, Jack Nicklaus would walk about Kapalua with that on, or Tiger Woods. You know, I can't really see it. So maybe there's a sign there. But yeah, I think Ricky's, you know, a brilliant player. He's always capable, but you know, that doesn't get you anywhere. You know, that's only takes you so far. And we've seen, obviously, with Sergio, it took him until he was 37 years of age to win a major. And Sergio was a little bit like, you know, Ricky, where he was an incredible talent, you know, great technical ability, exciting to watch. Maybe didn't win as many events as he really should have done, but he was also a contender. He eventually got there. It took him a very long time. You know, Ricky's 28, I think, now, so he's still a few years behind what Sergio was. But, you know, he has got still some time left in the tank for Ricky Fowler. But, again, with all these guys that are there, you almost need to feel that Ricky needs to be at the right place at the right time. You know, maybe one to fall on his lap to win one. But we'll see what happens. It'd be great to see, because I think he's a very likable character. He's very popular with the fans on television and on the golf course. So it would be a really good win for golf if he managed to pick up a major. But will it happen or not? We'll have to wait and see. But yes, Carlos, you mentioned Tiger Woods. And again, somehow this guy, despite all the great players we've talked about earlier, he still is the main headline maker in golf. He's still the one figure that the game has who really transcends the sport. He dominates not just golf headlines, but sport headlines. You know, people in sports channels talk about him. No other golfer but Tiger Woods. He has this great celebrity. He still has this aura about him. And but so many, obviously, false dawns of his comebacks in recent years. And I think some people, and I have to say, I've kind of been one of them to an extent, have grown a little bit fatigued by Tiger's comebacks and talks in recent years. However, I think this most recent one has a different feel about it in many ways. I think at the Hero Challenge when he turned up there, and it was amazing actually he even played there, because I remember the President's Cup, a few weeks before, he was basically saying, well, I don't know what the future holds, I'm not even playing golf. And then within a month or two, he was back playing. And when he turned up there, you know, I think surprised everybody with how he played. And it wasn't just the fact he finished in the top 10, it's a very small event, half the guys there are just on vacation, but it was more the how he did it. And off the tee, you know, he had a swing speed that was, you know, reminiscent of what he was maybe 10 years ago. It was, you know, very surprising. It was up there with a lot of the longer hitters on the tour last year. And that took everybody by surprise, because even when Tiger had success in more recent years, you go back to 2013 when he won 5 times and became world number one again, which I actually think is probably his most underrated achievement after what he went through to get back to that position 5 years ago. He did it in a different way. He did it more as a placement golfer, as a strategy golfer, not as a power golfer. But the game has changed in that time. All the big power players are now at the top. And for Tiger to really beat those guys in any sort of, even contend with them on a consistent level, he has to up that speed. And he had that at the Hero Challenge. So off the tee, he was very impressive. And that was eye-catching. And that maybe showed that perhaps this comeback is a little bit different because he has the physical ability now to actually swing like a proper golfer, not a kind of an inhibited one, which he had been for several years. You know, obviously, the spinal fusion surgery, which is really the kind of last resort, and perhaps something that should have happened several years before. It seems that the kind of the micro-dissecting surgeries were a little bit kind of half-hearted and didn't really deal with the root problem. They went all the way this time, and who knows, maybe it's turned out for the best for him. But with Tiger, we talked about his schedule early on. Obviously, he'll play events coming up at Torrey Pines and the Riviera. We'll see him play before the Masters. He plans to play all four majors this year. I think it depends on just, you know, how he plays. You know, obviously, finishing ninth in an 18-man event is one thing. You know, making cuts, you're getting to the top 20s, top 10s, and big full-field events is another thing entirely. On kind of more tougher setups, which you'll see at Torrey Pines and Riviera. Those are much more difficult golf courses than the Hero Challenge was. So we don't quite know what Tiger's going to do this year, how he's going to compete. I think the potential is there for him to play well. If he plays how he did at the Hero Challenge and builds on that, becomes more, you know, match ready, tightens up the short game a little bit, then he has the capability of contending with the guys on certain golf courses and in certain situations. But the question is, can he do it consistently? And will his body hold up? Will his, you know, that's the real question there. We don't yet know. We hope it does, but we can't be sure. So I think Tiger will remain a really fascinating subplot. But what role he has this year will be determined by how well he plays when we see him there. If Tiger's going to just turn up and be a bit part player, you know, make the odd cut, you know, not really do anything, then I think we'll go a little bit tired of him being there after a while. But if he comes back, if he contends, if he gets into, you know, a top five or top ten, if he can find himself somehow within, you know, half a dozen shots of the lead going into the last day of the Masters, you know, that sort of thing, is he capable of that? I still think he is. I think he has, you know, his intelligence, his golfing brain. He has so much experience. He has more knowledge than all these guys combined. And I think that counts for a lot. And I think the players, if they saw Tiger Woods on the leaderboard with them, they've never really seen that, these young guys. You know, even though he's not the player he was 15, 20 years ago, you can't expect him to be that. But we forget how good Tiger Woods was 15, 20 years ago. I mean, he was unbelievable. So if he can get to even two-thirds of that level, he will still be a contender. And he has that experience. We've also seen guys through the years that have won majors. You know, Ernie Els won the Open when he was 42, Jack Nicklaus at the Masters in 1986, that sort of thing. Can Tiger do something like that? Maybe on the right golf course, you know, maybe an Open Championship, maybe somewhere like that. Maybe even at Augusta, you know, he has so much experience there. So I think Tiger will remain a real fascinating subplot this year. But what I really want to see from him is getting into contention and playing well. If he does that, that'll be great for golf, because in my mind, if Tiger plays well, it'll actually elevate the other players alongside him, because in the end, he still brings in the viewers. You look at the figures from the Hero Challenge, massive viewing figures, among the highest of the year. So when Tiger plays, people watch. And when they're watching Tiger Woods play, they're also watching Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, those guys. And if people watch him playing against those guys, maybe they beat him or play better than him or whatever, it creates stars from those guys as well, just by being associated with Tiger Woods, because he brings eyes to it. So I think if Tiger comes back and plays well, it's going to be fantastic for golf and fantastic for the players of today as well. So I think in the end, as a golf fan, as somebody who follows the game very closely, I would love to see it happen. I hope he can come back and win this year. I'm not sure he's going to. Time will tell. I hope he does. I can't give you a definitive answer on that, Carlos. But in terms of Tiger, you know, as I said earlier, he's still the man. He's still the needle. He's still the guy that sets the tone and sets the headlines. We all just worship at his feet almost to this day. But if he can back that up, back that profile up with some great golf, And we saw flashes of it at the end of last year. If he can do it consistently and try and, you know, get into contention, win events, potentially, even just be up there, yeah, I think that would be fantastic. So I hope it happens. And here's a question for you both. The Tiger last year, 2016, was obviously an assistant captain at the Ryder Cup. What are the chances of seeing Tiger Woods in the Ryder Cup team this year?
Hold on, Fred. Don't answer. You will get your chance after I get my questions answered. But you already, Fred, outdid me with that Dustin Johnson claim that when he's on, nobody's better ever in the history of the world of golf. So hold on, because I have my statements coming out, and hold on to your seats right now. I'm going to talk about this couple of things
right now.
And I'm going to say,
we're going, you know, we're going all out in the first show of the year. We're making history here.
Yes, after seeing Tiger Woods and his swing there at the Hero World Challenge, he's going to win. I'm going to give him two wins, okay? Two wins. Okay?
Wow.
Watch this. I mean, even if he goes and wins before the Masters, start the hashtag 19 majors immediately. It's going to start. It's not going to be at all anything far-fetched. I'm not saying that he's going to win 19 majors, but he's going to win twice. Maybe he's going to win there at Arnie's Place, and maybe near you there at Mirfield later on in the season. I don't think he's going to win a major, but I loved everything I saw from him that week in Bahamas. I mean, save for a few chunk chips here and there, but he's blasting that driver, rolling that old Scotty Cameron putter, like he's trying to make everything he looks at. Of course, will he hold up that health? He looks like he does, and he will. If he's healthy, I think he will. He'll be contending and winning twice this year. It sure looks, what really gives me this sense is that he has that fire to win again. It looked like it there in that tournament in the Hero World Challenge. He was focused and looking forward to win. So that's my prediction with him. After I answer my question, you can be able to answer that, Fred. So my question now is, of course, and this is one that I like to answer a lot, is what young guys are worth watching in 2018. Of course, it would be too easy to say Jordan Spieth, John Rahm, and Justin Thomas, they're the 2, 3, and 4 in the world. Also, what do you define by young? I'm going to say 25 years or less. That's what I'm going to base it on. And I'm going to give you some other names that are not named Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, or John Rahm. I'm going to start by Maverick McNealy, 22 years old. And there was a time where the Stanford product didn't even think professional golf was in his future. He thought he might instead explore the business world like his very successful father, Scott McNealy, who co-founded some microsystems. But then in a change of heart, Maverick made the decision to turn pro after the Walker Cup in August and made his debut at the Safeway Open, where he tied for 52nd. He had a finishing round of 4 under 68 in round 1 and shot 71 in round 2. He struggled over the weekend then with rounds of 73 and 74. But, hey, look for him. It's tough to have a more decorated amateur career than what Maverick, whose standout Stanford resume included winning the Haskins and the Ben Hogarth Awards in different years while tying Tiger Woods' school record for career victories. The only problem that he has is that he'll enter the season with no status on any major tour. But on the bright side, you know, there's that reminder about that 19-year-old Jordan Spieth that found himself in a similar position back in 2012. I think he fared pretty well. So look out for Maverick McNealy this year. Another youngster, Bo Hostler, 22 years old. He finished 23rd on the Web.com Tour regular season money list. And he grabbed headlines, as you might remember, as a high schooler at the 2012 U.S. Open. Then he had a standout career at Texas, but a torn labrum delayed his pro debut. But he made up for that lost time with two runner-ups in a four-start span this summer. While he has less experience than others that are coming now into the PGA Tour, he won't be classified as a rookie because he made 8 PGA Tour starts last season, which is one more than the rookie threshold allows, and that's the same bogus stipulation that kept John Rahm from consideration for top rookie honors last season. But look out for him. He's not going to be the rookie of the year because of that, but he is a player to watch. Another youngster, Adam Wise, 21 years old. He finished 18th on the Web.com Tour regular money season money list. And while he sat out the 2016 NCAA championship final with a shoulder injury, he powered his Oregon squad to a team title days after, earning top individual honors and led the Ducks 3-0, becoming the first to win both honors since Kevin Chappell did it for UCLA in 2008. Weiss won on the McKinsey Tour. He's a winner on all levels that he's been. He won on the McKinsey Tour, PGA Tour Canada last year. And this year, in his first full season on the Fleetwood.com Tour, he fired back-to-back 62s to run away from the field and win the Web.com's Air Capital Classic, supporting Wichita's youth by 5 shots and notch 2 other top 20 finishes during the Web.com Tour Finals. So watch out for Aaron Weiss. Another, all Schneider, 24 years old, despite not quite earning Rookie of the Year honors, Xander Schauffele's Tour Championship title made him a no-brainer, of course. But the Georgia Tech product had an impressive first campaign with 5 top 10s, including a runner-up, the Windham Championship, and a 3-T3 at Hilton Head. Expect at least a maiden PGA Tour win title for this hatless wonder this year, Ollie Schneider, 24 years old. The last two that I have for you. Patrick Cantlay, 25 years old. He came into the Valspar Championship on a major medical extension, but the former number one amateur solidified to a status for the runner-up at Innisbrook. Despite a limited schedule, he racked up a T3 at the RBC Heritage, T10 at the Northern Hunt Trust, and made a clutch 10-foot birdie putt on 18 on the BMW Championship to advance to the Tour Championship. My other announcement is that this guy, Patrick Cantlay, and the next one that I'm going to finalize here for the young guys are going to make the Ryder Cup this year. Count on it. Whoa. I'm saying it. Pat Cantlay is going to make it, along with the 23-year-old past Rookie of the Year, Xander Schauffele. You know, he missed 6 of 8 cuts early in 2017, then caught fire. You might remember that birdie from the trees on 18 helped him qualify for the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, where he finished T5. He won the Greenbrier Classic, then went 6 under for his last 6 at the BMW to move from 32 to 26 in the FedEx Cup playoffs, advancing to the Tour Championship at East Lake, and you may know what happened there with him, right? So that's it. Remember those names. It's going to be Maverick McNealy, Bo Hostler, Aaron Weiss, Ollie Schneider-Jones, and the two that are going to make the Ryder Cup, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. Fred, now, I leave it up to you. Talk about this, about Tiger Woods, and give us a preview of the PGA Tour, what's going to happen this year.
Well, you left me quite a bit there, actually. And the Ryder Cup thing, I'm going to go back to that a minute. I'm going to go back to Tiger Woods. I'm sorry.
Remember, there's going to be a preview by Kieran of the Ryder Cup, so...
I know, but I
don't go too deep on.
you brought this up, so you got these young guys, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, making the Ryder Cup team, and the numbers are not there. They're going to have to do something spectacular to get on that team, because I think Tiger Woods is going to be on the Ryder Cup team. Okay, so yeah. So now you got Kuchar, you got Johnson, you got Justin Thomas, and you got Ricky and Jordan and Daniel Berger, and you know, on and on and on. There's no room for these guys. They're great players.
They'll make room for themselves. You'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all I'm going to say about that right now. As we get through the year, we'll be talking about the Ryder Cup a lot, and we're still going to talk about it some more tonight. But you are the best at picking these young guys. This is our 5th year of doing this, and every year we've done it, you have picked the leading, like the Rookie of the Year, I think, on the men's and the women's tour pretty much every year. I mean, you've picked the guys – the women and the men that we're going to watch, whether they're from Europe or whether they're from the U.S. or where they're coming from, Asia, I don't know how you do this, but you know this stuff. So you're like the young player guru. So I have to yield to your knowledge and wisdom, but I respectfully disagree at this point. So, okay, with that said, let's talk about the tour a little bit. So, and, you know, we've really been talking about the main topic the whole show so far. The U is dominating the PGA Tour. Right? For the first time in a long time, the average age of the winners on the PGA Tour last year was under the age of 30. This list is long and is exciting for golf fans. You know, and you heard Bones say it on the telecast over the weekend, you know, golf is in such a great place. You with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler and Daniel Berger, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Hideki, Siwoo Kim, Brooks Koepka, and then Bryson DeChambeau. Those guys all won last year, and they're all young guys. I would be hard-pressed to think back to a time when the tour was blessed with so many great young players. You know, normally you have one or two maybe come along every year and really distinguish themselves. But right now, I mean, we've got 10, 12 young guys that could win any week. So then you throw in this guy, this freak, Dustin Johnson, and he's going to have something to say every week about who's going to win. If he's on, nobody else is going to. So, you know, he's going to have multiple wins this year. And then we got this other kid from Ireland that's going to be coming back and playing a little bit, this Rory McIlroy guy. You know he's got to be hot to win because he didn't win last year for only the second time in his career, and he was off most of the year with injury and struggled even when he did play because he wasn't right. So you got 45 events. You got over $350 million in prize money. You got the four majors, four WGCs, plus the players. I just can't wait to talk about it. I mean, we have got so much. The listeners should be able to hear it in our voices tonight, how excited we are about all this stuff. So that's a pretty brief preview, Carlos. It's a full tour. There's going to be something every week, and it's good stuff.
Kieran, what's your take on what you think about the PGA Tour? And, of course, nobody better than you to bring us a preview of what the European Tour is going to be like this year.
Yes, indeed. And I have to say, Fred's obviously had his tablets today because he is very excited and overly enthusiastic, I think, because I'm comparatively subdued and calm. I'm trying to keep an even keel here because look at you guys.
Is that possible?
Fred's got Tiger making the Ryder Cup. You've got Tiger winning 19 majors. I'm sitting here saying he might win, he might not win, but I think he'll play quite well. I'm sitting on the fence. I'm doing the sensible thing. You guys are going out there with the predictions and whatnot. But,
we're going for the ratings. We're going for the ratings, Kieran.
Well, I will say, you always want to root for the story. That's why I look at it. So, yeah, the story would be Tiger coming back and doing all these great things against these young guys. But that would certainly define the PGA Tour. And obviously, it's going to be a great year in the PGA Tour. It's like a revolving circus. It goes on and on and on. It never ends nowadays. You know, the wraparound season seems to go on forever. And again, so many great young players. However, this is kind of a little curveball. You know, could this year be the year that maybe some of the older guys start to reestablish themselves a little bit? Look at Justin Rose. He was so great at the end of the year on the European Tour and indeed on the PGA Tour, given the WGC, the co-sanctioned event. So Justin Rose played so well at the end of last year. He almost won the Masters, of course. So maybe this will be the year that Justin Rose comes back and starts to pick up multiple wins in America, which I know is his ambition for this year, and potentially another major as well, because he has all the experience and obviously a very solid all-round game. There's really no faults to Justin Rose's game, apart from perhaps not being the most prolific of putters, but he's still very capable. And even Sergio, you know, Sergio, major winner, you know, he wants to defend that Masters title and perhaps even win another one this year as we get towards the majors. So maybe this year some of the older guys might come back. What about Adam Scott? He's kind of fallen away a little bit. Can he find some form again? You never know. You know, those kind of guys. Mark Leishman's a little bit older, very consistent player. Seems to be getting better and better as time goes on. You know, Jason Day is now in his 30s. You know, he was world number one last year. Forgot all about him. You know, he's still, you know, on his day, still really capable. Hasn't shown it for a while now, but this year could be the return of Jason Day. So again, all young guys are there, doing so well, so consistent, so many of them to mention. You know, I'd also throw in the likes of Cameron Smith, the Australian golfer who won the Australian Masters back in December, as well as winning the Zurich Classic last year in New Orleans with Jonas Blixt. So you have those guys there. But you know, Fred's talking about young guys and whatever else, but he's still thinking Tiger Woods is going to do well. So there's still some room there for older guys if they have the hunger. And I think the ones that do will still do well. You know, Henrik Stenson, those kind of guys. So, yeah, it should be a fascinating year, as it will be on the European Tour. Because I think any year, any Ryder Cup year, the spotlight is on the European Tour more so than it otherwise would be, because obviously the qualification, we're trying to look at the players who could come through the European Tour and get onto the team. Perhaps some of the names maybe come from left field. Obviously, the top European names play predominantly in America, so we know them all the time. But there's always kind of a second tier of player who can emerge throughout the season by winning multiple times on the European Tour and getting onto the team that way, or forcing the captain's hand and getting a wild card pick. So the European Tour has had a fascinating couple of years, a lot of kind of changes to the schedule. Obviously, the Rolex Series was introduced last year, you know, big money events for the schedule. They'll be retained this year. Excuse me. And so, as I always say, the European Tour, there's kind of two European Tours within one. There's the one that we pay attention to and the one we don't care about. And the one that we pay attention to in the end is going to be the events in the Middle East. It will be the Rolex Series events, which include the BMW PGA Championship, the Italian Open, the Open de France, the Irish Open, the Scottish Open. And then later in the year, you also have the HSBC Champions, Turkish Airlines Open, and the Nedbank Challenge. So the European Tour goes through little waves and sequences. But I think also when we get towards the Ryder Cup, those events become even more important. So the Made in Denmark, Nordea Masters, European Masters, those events there become more paramount as we get towards the Ryder Cup. So the European Tour, obviously last year we saw Torrey Fleetwood come through, have a fantastic season, and win the race to Dubai, and a great finale against Justin Rose in the last day. So a great finish to the campaign, one of the best I've had, and again, it was a great end to the year. So the European Tour also looking for the new kind of emerging stars who can come through and make a name for themselves this year. Obviously, saw Fleetwood do it this year, or last year. The Tyrrell Hatton again, he won twice in 2 weeks, was so consistent. We obviously saw John Rahm emerge, he won the Irish Open, of course, the finale there in Dubai as well. So there was a lot of really good players emerging on the tour playing there. But again, as I say, European Tour tends to be a case of we pay attention when the big names are playing, and they'll play in the Rolex events, the Middle East, and of course this year, given it's the Ryder Cup year, we'll see more of them over here more frequently, I would say, particularly around the Open Championship, playing events before that, trying to build up their schedule, trying to get some ranking points on the team, also really show face. Because in the end, the Ryder Cups are very much a political game on the European Tour. It's all about trying to support the tour, show face, scratch the right people's backs. And if you do that, you might get in the team. So I think that will be a few guys will be kind of angling that political scene this year as well and making more regular appearances over here. But certainly under Keith Pelly, the European Tour has a certain optimism about it now that perhaps it didn't have several years ago, where it was kind of just stagnating. But now it has the Rolex events. The events in the Middle East are getting bigger. Even the events in the UK and Europe, you also have the British Masters. It's now a really big event. So there are some signs to be optimistic for the European Tour going forward. Keith Pelly's kind of brought in an energy and a dynamism as CEO, and he has a lot of ideas, some of them good, some of them bad, but he tries everything. And you have to admire that. He's an innovator in that respect, and I think he's done a very good job thus far. And I think European Tour is... I still think in many ways European Tour does offer... And if you like golf courses and you like... environments and so on, I think the European Tour does offer something that the PGA Tour doesn't comparatively, is a greater diversity of golf courses. Many of the PGA Tour's golf courses, out with the more higher ranking events, tend to be a little bit prosaic and very similar to each other, whereas the European Tour offers a more kind of a wider menu of golf courses and kind of variety of golf. So for a real kind of golf aficionado, I still think the European Tour has an allure in that respect. But yes, I think a lot of great players. We'll talk about the Ryder Cup a little bit more shortly, but I think, again, every year the Ryder Cup's on, that kind of defines the European Tour season. And in Carlos, I think that'll be the case this year, where we're paying attention to where the big names play and also trying to identify those emerging players who could break onto the Ryder Cup team when we get towards September.
Oh, I can't wait for that. So I'll reserve my comments on the Ryder Cup for a little later on. But let's talk now a little bit about the LPGA. I mean, I don't think I have time enough to talk about this because so many great players and contending week after week. The LPGA continues to thrive as truly global tour under the stewardship of Commissioner Michael Wan. And to preview this year, first, let's talk about the schedule. I mean, when the LPGA revealed the schedule for this year, it showed that it will feature 34 worldwide events and a record $68.75 million in prize money. And though two events are off the schedule and a third will take place in the spring of 2019, Wan added three new tournaments, including one in China and two full field events on the West Coast. Purses will increase from $65 million that were paid out last year. The LPGA will again kick off its season at the Pure Silk Bahamas Classic in January 25 to the 28th and wrap it up as usual with the CME Group Tour Championship in Naples, Florida, in November 15 to the 18th. One thing that stands out after seeing the LPGA schedule is that they are going to be playing 16 consecutive domestic tournaments over 4 months. Wow, that's going to be big. 16 weeks in a row they're going to be playing here on the States. And to give you a best preview, let's talk about the players individually. Let's go for the world number one, Chan Chong Fong, 28 years old, achieving the number one ranking by going T3, T2, win-win prior to a T21 at the CME Group Tour Championship, where she was the favorite. Three wins, 12 top 10s, and over $1.72 million in earnings. Her best year yet at 28. What's in store for an encore? That's the question for Chan Chong Fong. The world number two, Sung Yun Park, 24 years old, the first rookie ever to become world number one, and only second to Nancy Lopez to also, as a rookie, win Player of the Year award, which she shared with Soyeon Ryu. And like Fong, with two wins and 11 top 10s, how can she now, in her second full year, follow that up? That is what we want to see about Sungyeon Park. Soyeon Ryu, the world number three, 27 years old. She became number one thanks to the strength of her consistency and reign as the world's Rolex number one for 19 consecutive weeks before losing to the top spot to Sungyeon Park. But she tailed off a little bit on the second half of the year due to a muscle strain in her right shoulder, which she played through, and now the time off should have healed it. So look forward to see her back in full strength and try to take a shot at that world number one once again. Lexi Thompson, world number four. She's just 22 years old, and she was just one TV replay and a two-foot miss putt away from winning her second major and sweeping all the honors on the LPGA. She was a bit inconsistent down the stretch, but 2018 looks very promising for Lexi, and she's coming back for what she missed on. This could be Lexi's breakthrough year. Inge Shanda, world number five, she's 23. She had 10 top 10s and no wins. Seems like a quiet year for her after her breakthrough 2016, where she won the event championship in record-setting fashion. She just couldn't close the door. She finished second five times and third two times. She will certainly be looking to turn on a couple of those into wins this year. World number six, I.K. Kim, 29 years old. She banished that haunting memory of a missing 14-inch putt to win a major and replace it with the sweetest sensation by winning the Women's British Open. Won three times, but she was pretty much make or break all year. If she can find some consistency out of the confidence that she earned last year, she'll be one to watch. World number seven is Arya Yutanova, 22 years old, and after her year-long battle in 2016 with Lydia Ko, which was her breakthrough year with five wins and the world number one, after her Manulife LPGA Classic, she went MIA. I mean, five cuts and a withdrawal in seven starts, then a four starts where T30 was her best before starting to show signs of life at the Blue Way when she finished T16 and then winning in Aria fashion the Tour Championship. If that was a sign of things to come, everybody else is on notice. She's back and looking for the top spot again. Number eight is Anna Norquist, 30 years old. She won the Open Championship, but she was battling illness for most of the year. She played a courageous Solheim Cup, made it last late in the year, but she's always one consistent player that she will be especially contending on the big stage. Number nine, world number nine, Lydia Ko, 20 years old, much like Aria. She disappeared from the top of the rankings and the leaderboards, but it was after surprisingly switching caddies. She slipped out of the top 10, but did, however, show that she's getting back to form with a solo second at the Indy Women in Tech Championship, added another one at the Swinging Skirts, and would be in the top 20 in each tournament since. So she's primed to get back into the win column this year and make another run at number one. She's definitely getting back into form. Other notable players to watch: Christy Kerr at the ripe age of 40. She isn't slowing down. She won twice last year and can still compete. She will be in the mix from time to time. Amy Park, she's 29 years old. She played only 15 times and has been battling her wrist injury and other ailments. Will she finally be healthy? Can she still compete at the highest level? Those are the questions that we want to see answered this year. Brooke Henderson, 20 years old. She had two wins last year, and she just runs in streaks. When she gets going, she can beat anybody. I mean, of all the youngsters, when she was coming into the stage, I thought she would be the one to come out on top and be that dominant player among them. But she has not fulfilled that potential, even though she, you know, has the ability. She reminds me a lot of Ricky Fowler on the main side. She has the ability, she has the way to play, but unlike Ricky, she has already won a major though. So look for her. I look forward to seeing her this year. Stacey Lewis, 32, was able to finally get in the win column last year, but she has not been that consistent player that she was a few years back, and getting back in the top of the leaderboards as constantly as she used to. Daniel Kang won her first major and her first career win, but only had six top tens all year. She's still not consistent enough and has not lived up to the potential she has. Charlie Hall, she has been very disappointing. I mean, only three top tens all last year, one in her last 16 tournaments. After winning the Tour Championship in 2016, I widely expected that she could be catapulting to her breakthrough year, but it was a forgettable one. She has the talent still up to her to piece everything together and take it to that next level. One thing that she has going is that she's been trending upwards in recent finishes, so let's see for Charlie Hall. Michelle Wee, could this be her year at 28 years old? Injuries keeping her from breaking through. First thing I wish for her is to have a full, healthy year. I know the rest will fall into place. Some other players that capture my attention, and it's intriguing to me what they could do and possibly be first-time winners this year: Maria Jutanagarn. While younger sister Aria was struggling, she came close twice on winning her first LPGA tournament. She's not anymore Aria's sister. She came into her own with 11 top 10 finishes, and this year could very well be the year she gets her maiden win. Brittany Altomer, she grabbed the attention when she got into a good string of results. They included losing the Evian Championship to Anna Norquist in a playoff. She really didn't do much else aside from that string, but that showed some potential that there's something worth to look at this year. Marina Alex was trending towards consideration for the Solheim Cup. She didn't make it, but it was showing that she's also capable of contending with the top players. Like Altomare, she just needs a slight push to take it to the next level and win. Angel Jean, technically, she already has a win because she won the Omega Dubai, the Ladies Desert Classic, on the Ladies European Tour last December, beating IK Kim with a birdie on the second extra hole. She scored 1.5 points out of three matches in the Solheim Cup, and is gaining confidence that showed on that win on the Ladies European Tour. One definitely one to watch. And the final look that I'll give you is at the rookie class. And, of course, you're expecting me to say who's going to be the rookie of the year. I'm going to tell you pretty soon. Georgia Hall leads that rookie class. She's currently 41 on the Rolex rankings and was a 2017 Solheim Cup team member, and will be one of the favorites to win that top rookie honors this year. Nana Kortz Madsen, 23 years old. She blitzed the Symetra Tour last year. Three wins to earn automatic upgrade to the LPGA. Also via the Symetra Tour comes Australian Hannah Green, who won three times. She's 21 years old and finished second on the money list. And another Chinese player who's on the rise is the ultra-consistent Zhu Liu, who's 22 years old, won once and finished fifth on the tour. Tiffany Shen, she will be the first player from Hong Kong to ever play on the LPGA Tour. Now, as you are all, I'm sure, are waiting, my pick for the Rookie of the Year, which is a lock when I pick it. You know, it's going to be in the LPGA, not Georgia Hall. No, she will finish a very competitive second, but for the fourth year in a row, it will be a South Korean. Her name is Jin Young Ko, 22-year-old. She earned her LPGA membership by winning the LPGA Cup Hana Bank Championship last October. She's best known for finishing runner-up to fellow South Korean Inbae Park at the 2015 Women's British Open after losing a three-stroke lead on the back nine at the Ailsa course of Trump Turnberry. Interestingly enough, Ko famously only met her caddy, a young local man, the day before the Open and had never played Lynx golf before. So there you have it. That's the LPGA 2018 preview in what I tried to make a nutshell because it was just too much, but it was a full booklet for all of you there. So, Fred, your thoughts on that and the preview of the Champions Tour. Of the Bernhard Langer Tour.
Yeah. I'm going to give you one more name. Emma Talley, somebody that we've been talking about for a couple of years as an amateur, but now as a professional, you know, she's finally made it to the LPGA Tour, and I think she's primed to have a good year. So hopefully she'll give your South Korean lady a run. You covered so much there, Carlos. I have a lot of comments, but I will save them for future shows. We're going to be talking about the LPGA Tour a lot for sure, and I too hope that Michelle Wee can get back to form. I really think the LPGA Tour needs her, and I hope she can have a good year. I love to watch her play when she's playing well. So let's talk just a little bit about the Bernhard Langer Tour for 2018. The question is, will he continue to dominate the Champions Tour? Who's going to knock him off the throne? There's 28 events on the Champions Tour next year. There's going to be one right up here, a new one, right up the road here in Flint, north of here a little ways. Scotty McCarron has played really well, but he's not even close to catching Langer. Langer, who is now 60, he had 7 wins last year. 3 of those were majors. He completely dominated the rest of the old guys. And he's not showing any signs of slowing down anytime soon. You know, you got Davis Love and Vijay Singh, who are both over 50. But they continue to play on the regular tour and make big money out there, so why come down and play with the old guys? If they would commit full-time to Champions Tour, they probably would give Bernhard a run on a consistent basis. A guy who was hurt last year, who's Colin's good buddy, Kieran's good buddy, Colin Montgomery, had some injury problems last year. If he's healthy, he could give Langer a run. You know, he plays pretty well in spurts. And then you got the most interesting man in golf, Miguel Angel Jimenez. He doesn't play in a lot of Champions Tour events, but he finishes high when he does play. So if he played more, he could be a factor. And nobody really talks about this, but, you know, Freddie Couples won twice last year, but you know, his back and his interest level just doesn't seem to allow him to be a force on the senior tour for any long periods of time. And then you got Steve Stricker. He could be that guy, but he's still making big bucks out there with the young guys, along with Love and Vijay Singh, so there's no real incentive for him to bounce back down to the Champions Tour. Then you got 7 former PGA Tour winners who's going to turn 50 this year. Among those, you got Darren Clark, who, if he can find some semblance of a game, he might give Bernhard a go. You also got Dudley Hart, Chris DeMarco, Robert Gomez, and Brent Guyberger. Will be Brent Guyberger. Boy, that's hard to believe that he's 50 years old. Oh my goodness, I must be really old. You've got a couple new tournaments: the Alley Challenge during the week of September 10th. Comes back up here to Warwick Hills, up here in Flint, and you got the Sanford International that will be held the following week in over in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. at Minnehaha Country Club. So some new events for the Champions Tour. But bottom line here, I don't see a clear-cut competitor for Bernhard Langer. No one seems to want to get that serious about it. I'm not sure how he does it, but Langer will probably continue to be the main storyline for the Champions Tour in 2018, guys.
I wouldn't be surprised. Kieran, your thoughts on the Bernhard Langer Tour and preview for the Ryder Cup for this year?
Yes, excuse me. Yes, Carlos, I have to agree. You know, Bernhard Langer is a phenomenon. It is quite remarkable how consistent he remains. Of course, bizarrely, despite his dominance last year, he didn't win the Charles Schwab Cup. That, of course, was won by Kevin Sutherland, which, of course, underlines that...
Don't get me started on that, Kieran. You're going to piss me off. Don't even go there.
I was about to say, Fred, it's amazing that somehow there's something in golf even more stupid than the FedEx Cup.
Absolutely.
Astonishing. However, yes, but Bernhard Langer, a phenomenon, and I'm most looking forward, actually, this year to the Senior Open Championship, which will be held at the Old Course at St. Andrews for the first time this year in July, and that's, I think, quite a nice statement for the Champions Tour and the European Senior Tour, which, of course, is now called the Stasure Tour for sponsorship reasons. So it's nice to come here and play at the Homer Golf. I remember when the LPGA did it 10 years ago, bringing the Open here to St. Andrews. That was a big statement for them too, and I think for the Champions Tour, it'll be one that all the guys there will enjoy coming back and spending the week in the town and kind of reliving past glory. So that's an event to look out for later this year. But yeah, on the Ryder Cup, obviously, I think it kind of, it's always, we have the majors, we have the World Golf Championships, but the Ryder Cup is a unique event in golf. It's, again, a little bit like Tiger Woods, where it almost transcends golf, where it kind of brings in casual viewers because it has that kind of team environment, team dynamic to it, head-to-head, two sides going head-to-head together, you know, exciting. You know, match play, when it gets going, can be really, you know, momentum shifts. It can be thrilling to watch when it clicks. And when the matches swing back and forth and you have birdies and eagles, you know, we saw that a little bit 2 years ago with Diana. I remember that amazing match with, you know, Phil and Sergio and, you know, Rory and Captain America, Mr. Reid. You know, that was fantastic. So we have great moments. And the Ryder Cup always delivers some kind of drama and excitement. And, of course, this year it's a unique one because America are actually defending champions. Could have believed it. So they finally won one again. So there we are. Quite amazing. And it was something that very well deserved 2 years ago. And with Davis Love as the captain then, Jim Furyk now the captain this year. And, of course, he has that really formidable-looking lineup of players. There's so many great young stars. We talked about them all throughout the show. So many of the guys at the top of the world rankings. You know, there's so many great American players there. Their team are well embedded now together. They've been successful in the President's Cup, the Ryder Cup. You know, there's a real unity there as well, and though they are a formidable outfit. However, I do think there is a danger, at least in kind of media circles within the US, that they're almost underappreciating the European team. And I think it forgets how many good European golfers there are. And I know Rory McIlroy has not been the player he was before, same with maybe Henrik Stenson, but when you think about Sergio winning a major, always plays well in the Ryder Cup, John Rahm emerging, Tommy Fleetwood, all these guys, you know, they are going to be real stars, potentially. And it's a real kind of a good base of young players as well for Thomas Bjorn, who's the European team. And, of course, they're playing in home soil. And the United States hasn't won in Europe since 1993, when Tom Watson's team won at the Belfry. So that was actually the last time the US won two in a row, in 1991 and 1993. So they're coming in, you know, they're playing a golf course in the Golf National. It's one of the great venues on the European Tour, a long-time host of the Open de France, and it's a thrilling course, you know, visually stunning, so many water holes towards the end. It's such a, you know, tumultuous back nine. It's just made for drama and unpredictability and excitement. It's probably like the equivalent of perhaps taking the Ryder Cup to the kind of the last four holes of the Players' Championship at PBC Sawgrass. It's that kind of level, even more so because the water's even more prominent at the Golf National towards the end. So it's almost made for drama. You know, the great natural banks, big crowds will gather around there. You know, everyone's very excited about the venue itself and how it's going to work out. So it should be a really compelling week when we get there. And of course, in terms of the teams themselves, the makeup will be defined throughout the season, obviously. Who will emerge? There's always a surprise player who breaks in, usually in the FedEx Cup playoffs or whatever, comes in and forces the captain's hand to get picked and that sort of thing. Same in the European Tour as well towards the end. Thomas Peters was really the guy 2 years ago who did that and obviously played so well when he got to Medina. So I think the Ryder Cup is always a great event. It's always delivers drama and excitement. I'm certain it'll be the same this year. I know everybody's really excited about the American team and they're getting all the plaudits, all the talk, but I think the European team is potentially going to be underrated. There's a very strong unit there and a lot of players who will be coming on with more experience this time after making their debuts 2 years ago, and even some fresher guys like Rahm and Fleetwood who have been among the best players in the world in the past year coming onto the team as well, likely. So, yeah, I think the European team will be very strong, as will the American team, and it makes for a very compelling match. And I think both captains will be pleased with their lineups, and they'll both have a strong side. But, of course, the question is, obviously I mentioned Tiger Woods, will he play in the team this year? The question is, will Phil Mickelson pick himself for the Ryder Cup this year, or will he step aside and let somebody else take his place? That's another question for us to answer this season. The Ryder Cup's always good fun, but who's going to win it? We'll have to wait and see. But you guys are kind of big on predictions this year, so I'm going to make a prediction. Europe will win the Ryder Cup this year. They'll upset and sink the overconfident Americans and reclaim the Ryder Cup. There you go. That's my prediction.
I agree. I'm going to go back you up on that. I think that the United States last time that they won twice in a row was, like you said, 1991, 1993, and they won. That was the last time they won on European tour soil. On European soil, I don't think it's going to happen, even though the U.S. has a stack of great talent, and they're going to have, like I said, they're going to have Patrick Cantlay, and they're going to have Xander Schauffele, whether...
And Tiger Woods. Well,
and Tiger Woods. They're going to be all three there. Probably Phil
Mickelson. Oh, guys, you're missing it. You're going to have Tiger and Phil as the picks. They're going to lead the kumbaya in the team room, and they're all going to go out and just beat the hell out of the Europeans. And, you guys are missing it. I don't know how you can even think like that.
No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I think that the Europeans are going to come back with, I mean, unless Patrick Reed starts World War III there in France, that's the only way I think that the Americans is going to win, if he starts World War III there. But no, it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be a great, I think, one for the ages, because the Europeans are going to come with a great team. There's a lot of great players that are going to be now. I mean, Paul Casey, I'm sure he's going to be there. He wants to be there. He's playing great. I mean, we just saw a lot of, you already mentioned a lot of the names there. Sergio, Justin, Henrik Stenson, they're going to be the veterans on the team. But there's a Tyrell Hatton. I mean, there's a lot of good players that are going to be coming. Thomas Peters, Rory McIlroy is going to be back, and they're going to be playing in home soil. So all the fans are going to be rallying behind them. But we'll talk about it as it comes progressing on it. So now it's time for our final thoughts of what we think in 2018. I mean, there's not much left to say, really, other than there are a couple of players that I think have not been mentioned much, and I think there's a bounce back on its way for Jason Day this year. He had a very tough year last year, but I think that's a player that I'm looking forward to have a bounce back, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. I am still not ready to tell you who's going to be a PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. I'm trying to pick against Peter Uihlein. I cannot think how Peter Uihlein can be a rookie after all that he's done, and especially last year in the European Tour. He's going to be a rookie, and I'm trying to pick against him. I'm still debating, but next week I'll tell you who I think it'll be. There's so many stories that we already talked on the LPGA. I'm just going to leave it up to you guys. I think we've said a lot of things already, but I can't wait. I want to see the Masters already next week. So many great stories. Fred, what are your final thoughts on this year?
It's only 86 days until the Masters, guys. Just so you know, only 86 days. You know, I want to mention real quick. I'm sorry.
I'm not counting the days down, Fred. I've got a calendar. I'm taking the days off in Masters.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah. I do want to mention before we get away today that the new Ohio Golf Journal, the January issue, will come out tomorrow, which features we've been talking about Boyne Resort a little bit. It features them on the cover. Matt Janella had a religious experience to Bandon Dunes at the end of the year, and I talked to him about that a little bit, and I wrote that story up and put it in there. And Evan Scholars continues to help kids earn scholarships through caddying. So you can find all that at OhioGolfJournal.com tomorrow. Plus, I want to mention that the inaugural issue of the Michigan Golf Journal was distributed while we were off last week. It has been a very big hit, very positive reviews coming back from all around the state and all over. So if you get a chance, look at Michigan Golf Journal. That's our newest publication that we have out there. We're doing it in partnership with our good friend Tom Lang up in Michigan. And we also have new shows on Backnine Report TV on Roku. If you have access to Roku TV, log on and download Backnine Report TV for a different take on the golf news. And my final thought, guys, is that 2018 looks like a professional golf on all levels is set to have another exciting year. And we are so lucky that we get to sit here and talk about it. We get to watch it and break it down, bring our listeners the news and information. We kind of put our spin on it forever, whatever that's worth. And I just so much enjoy talking about it with you guys every week. So looking forward to it.
And Kieran, before you gave us your final thoughts, I had here one note that I jumped over. I have so many stuff to talk to here that I jumped this one. But this was a question I had for you while you were going to preview the European Tour for this year. You know, you remember that Sergio Garcia, he finished a heartbreaking runner-up to Patty Harrington at the Open Championship in 2007, right? It was a bogey on the 18th hole there at Carnoustie that forced a playoff with him. And 11 years later, he's returning there with a major now to his credit. I believe that Sergio will have the peace of mind to finish the job this time around. What do you think about that?
Well, Carlos, as I said earlier, I always root for the story, and that would be a wonderful story. And I think Sergio has had such a fantastic record in the Open over his entire career, very consistent, came close several times, obviously most notably at Carnoustie in 2007. So, yeah, it would be kind of a redemption story there, and it would kind of complete his career. If he win the Masters, which seemed to be actually the most unlikely major for him to win, and then the Open would be the most likely one, and if you tick that off too, then it would be a pretty special career for him, and obviously a great kind of late career search for Sergio. So he's always capable, always has the potential, and like you said there, he doesn't have the baggage of not having won one on his back. But yeah, on a general point about the year ahead, I think it'll be, we've talked about it endlessly tonight, it'll be a tremendous year, but I think it's fair to say that most likely none of what we've said or predicted will actually come true. But we've got to
Oh, Carlos never misses on this Rookie of the Year stuff, Kieran. You know that. You're wrong about that.
I think Carlos is feeling the pressure this year. He couldn't back anyone on the PGA Tour. He's feeling the pressure. He's not sure this year.
He'll figure it out. I have confidence in him.
It's going to be a great year. And thank you, Kieran, for your insight, being with us again. We always enjoy your great sense of humor and all your knowledge that you bring here.
My pleasure.
Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report, the first one on 2018. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to you again, Kieran. Thank you for being with us. Looking forward to your next being with us in this show. So, and like you said, counting down to the Masters is not an option. We just hope it's here soon enough. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you miss it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, like Fred said, on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Pac-Man Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader and Kieran Clark. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
At Raising Cane's, we have one love, quality chicken finger meals. And during our Peel the Love game, we're giving you a 1 in 3 chance to win our one love or collect game pieces to win the $100,000 grand prize for whatever you love. Whether you love a trip around the world or all the chicken fingers you could ever want, play Peel the Love today at Raising Cane's for your chance to win our one love or yours. Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, one love. No purchase necessary in February 26th. Official rules and details on free entry at RaisingCane's.com/peel.